there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your head. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Welcome to On the Wing podcast presented by Purina Pro Plan. On today's edition of On the Wing podcast, I'm joined by a returning guest, Sport Dog Brand's Clay Thompson. And I've got a very specific topic in mind today. I would like, as we approach spring, and I know a lot of our listeners out there are getting a new puppy. We are going to tackle a straightforward step-by-step plan for introducing a new bird dog to electronic dog training collars, e-collars. Especially if you're a first-time bird dog owner, this episode is for you. Clay, thanks for making time to join me again. We're doing it remotely as opposed to in person. Last time we were recording, you still live in South Dakota, is that right?
I'm still in the Webster area, just east of Aberdeen. Thanks for having me again. I appreciate the accommodation for the remoteness. I wish we were together, but at least we still get to chat.
Tell our listeners a little bit about what your role is with Sport Dog.
So I'm a sales manager for Sport Dog. Have been with the brand since 2003. Which seems like a short amount of time until I start doing the math. what a great, just fun journey it's been. Multiple dogs in my life in that amount of time, and just really have enjoyed the ride with Sport Dog, and seeing PF grow as an organization and expand, and the things that have happened there. We've expanded corporately. It's always fun to talk to a partner, especially one such like-minded as we are at Sport Dog.
You started in 03. I started in 03. We both started when we were 12 years old.
Exactly.
don't pay attention to the gray in our beards.
No, not at all.
Remind me, I know you've had labs, but I seem to recall you have had some other breeds too over the years.
So our family dogs, we have my lab, LS, as he infamously was discussed
right.
Last
Little
time.
Little shit, that's
yes,
right.
Yes, that's him. Skeeter, that Bob, you can see behind me. Unfortunately, the listeners can't see his photo. He was a black lab as well. But we also have Bobby Joe, our cork retrieving golden retriever. And we have the occasional mimosa on the weekend. We shoot the cork across the room, and she loves to retrieve that. We have Noelle, our little mini Aussie. And so she's the old lady of the group. She's 14 and a half. She's deaf as a wedge, but still spry and definitely the leader of the pack still.
Fun. All right. Before we dive into the e-collar introduction, since you are in South Dakota, how was your bird hunting season?
You know what? It was good. It was so nice to, been a few years since the bird numbers were really back. We can talk about when there were birds and when, the hunting was good, but it had been 10 plus years since we had the bird numbers that we did this year. And I would say the winter was mild enough that we're seeing good bird numbers this spring. And obviously, very important, we're seeing a lot of hens because we need those hens to have made the winter to raise those next clutches. But yeah, the bird numbers were good. It was a fun season. The weather was a little odd, but we already set them in South Dakota, so that kind of goes without saying that you're going to have the ups and downs.
As we're recording, it's early March in Minnesota. March is the snowiest month, although we had some snow last week that's already melted off. Do you have any snow on the ground in northeastern South Dakota?
The only snow is on the north side of the house in the shade. So 3 days ago, we were in the 50s. It was gorgeous. Julie's driving around with the windows down. on the Bronco and life's good. Fast forward 36 hours, we have a couple inches of snow, a little bit of ice. All of that disappeared yesterday as we hit the 60s. So yeah, it's that totally weird time of year where you can have a blizzard and then wear shorts the next day, checking the mail.
Yeah. So like you had mentioned, it is setting up for pretty good spring nesting season. At least the winter was relatively mild. There's not any lingering snow as we head into early spring. So that's good. Good for everybody that travels to South Dakota. What about the potholes? Are the potholes filled up out there, or is it not been, it's been a little too dry for that?
So we went into winter not bad. I'm hopeful that, you know, these spring snows, as you know, when the ground's still frozen, we don't get much subsoil moisture out of it, but it fills the potholes. Hmm. And, you know, the pheasants, the ducks, they all need grass, and, mm-hmm. and we need that. So hopefully the snow hasn't matted down the cover. There's still that good nesting cover, some, you know, protection cover for the birds. I'm hopeful. I'm confident that we're going to see, you know, a good spring. But, you know, that's what we need is just some continued uptick. We had a good fall. We had good bird numbers. Let's carry as many of them forward as we can.
Yeah. Well, this topic we're going to tackle today is for, you know, the people that particular have a new bird dog pup. And, you know, they're, if you have a new bird dog pup, you're particularly interested in how the birds are setting up as well. So I appreciate the on the ground insight from South Dakota. I want to thank Purina Pro Plan once again for being the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast. Purina is also the national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. All of my pups have always eaten Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina is the national partner of our wildlife habitat mission, but because Purina has a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. Purina Pro Plan was created for the working bird dog like yours and like mine. You can learn more at ProPlansport.com. And this particular episode is being sponsored by Sport Dog Brand, also a national partner of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Founded in 2003, the same year Clay started with Sport Dog, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever have been partners with Sport Dog. Sport Dog has been part of the upland tradition for over 20 years. From preseason training to opening day, Sport Dog is committed to the hunters, the dogs, and the habitat that make it all possible. Every purchase you make with Sport Dog brand helps support conservation efforts nationwide. You can learn more at sportdog.com. All right, Clay, introduction to the e-collar for the new bird dog owner. And I think back to when I had my first dog that was mine as an adult, as opposed to the family dog. And, you know, the e-collar, I think, can go one of two ways in a person's mind. And what I'm thinking about is, some people are super intimidated by it. They don't know what to use it for.
Absolutely.
And then other people are like, well, this is going to solve all my problems. And think about the e-collar as the, you know, the Swiss Army knife. They slap it on the dog and it's going to fix everything.
It's not a magic wand, Bob. I mean, there are people that think it is, but it's just like, okay, we got to, you know, take a little time. It's impossible to train too patiently. You know, so it's one of those things that I wish it were, that we put the collar on the dog and the dog just, you know, magically behaved. But, you know, that had guys like docking out of business, so we don't want that either.
So somebody that's got a new bird dog pup and they have never gone through this process before, give them a starting point for what they want to do, because, you know, they probably, a person that's never had a dog before probably doesn't even know what age to start even thinking about a e-collar.
For sure.
And that's so what's the first step here?
So I'm going to back up just a little further. I'm going to go back to 93 when I used my first e-collar on a dog. I owe that dog a lot of apologies. We didn't know how to use the collars then. The collars also, back in that time frame, the settings went from hot to like really, really hot. We didn't have the ability to dial them down to where it really was just kind of a subtle cue that they are today. So I don't want to dismiss that we still have people that think of the e-collar as kind of an archaic, maybe a brutal tool. But I think that those misconceptions really are rooted in the really old technology and not what we have available today. So I kind of wanted to start there, that the e-collars have come so far that on the lowest settings, I can't feel them. Like even with the prongs on the tips of my fingers, the lowest settings, I can't feel. The dogs have a different perception, which is why and each dog is different. So that's why we start that low. And that's why we also have tone, we have vibration. So we have some non-shock cues that we can provide through the collar. So I just kind of wanted to set that up because
it's important, because you look at that dial, and that dial can be intimidating in and of itself, but
you bet.
That's an illustration of every dog's personality is different. And there is, you know, like you said, back in the day, it was hot and really hot.
Yeah.
And now there's a dial that, you know, it goes in the sport dog, I think it's 1875, the one I'm thinking of, goes 1 to 7 with a tone in there. So it's multiple levels, like you say, that matches a dog's personality and sensitivity.
100%. And the reason we need that is because each dog is different. So Skeeter, my first lab that was, as you said, like my dog that I trained, I got the training done. Our pro staffers, so Dawkins Oak Ridge Kennel, Chris Aiken's Webfoot Kennels, they both played roles in his training. He was a pipsqueak. He was like 53 pounds at his prime, but he was like a Porsche 911. He just had go. LS, who I love and adore, he's like this really lovely Buick. He's more comfortable, he's softer, but he just doesn't have the performance. He's also 65 pounds and really, really soft. So what worked with Skeeter and the level of pressure I could use and how quickly we could advance is different with LS. I'll also tell you that LS is, he's smarter in that he picks up on what we're, the technique or the obstacle that we're trying to get over. He picks it up faster and really wants to comply, where Skeeter had more of the, I'm going to trust my instincts and go. So I have to train him very differently. I'm way lower on the dial with LS than I was with Skeet. But that's okay. I have three beautiful daughters, none of whom have the same personality. You have to talk to them each differently. You have to use different techniques with them to, you know, kind of get them around to, let's get through this problem, let's work over that. So I think it's important that we have that ability. So as we're talking about, we got this new pup at home. Everybody's super excited. The dog is now the family's dog. It's no longer dad's. Nobody talked to this dog. He's going to live in a kennel at the back of the property. Nobody look at him. He's the family dog. She's the family dog. And so we bring the puppy home. Mom's excited. Dad's excited. The kids are excited. And then this little hellion starts being naughty. They start chewing on things. They start, you know, biting you. They start doing all the things that puppies do. And then inevitably somebody goes, okay, when is this little bastard going to get some training? When is he going to get some manners? Like, the cute's over. Let's fix this. And that's when the people want to grab the magic wand. And I'm like, okay, time out. Yeah. For the same reason we don't start kindergarten at 3, we shouldn't start the e-collar or start any real formal training on a puppy too soon. They don't have the physical stature. They don't have the mental maturity to really start some formal training yet. But it doesn't mean there aren't things we can do. I've watched, you know, guys, like I said, Tom Dawkins, train so differently than, you know, the 20 plus years ago when I first was around him. I'm seeing him use treats and kibble way earlier in the process before he would never would have been a treat trainer. I remember the day when he got a puppy to sit with a piece of kibble, and then he grabbed the next piece of kibble and he took his hand from the puppy's nose and extended it to his right, and the puppy followed it. And about the third time he did that, I said, "You're setting that dog up for hand signals." And he kind of gave me that wry grin that Tom has and just kind of like, Oh yeah, you're picking up. And so it's allowed us to much earlier integrate semi-formal training with the dog. Similarly, because the e-collar is so much softer now and has those non-shock cues, we can bring it in a lot sooner. So when I'm at Pheasant Fest and somebody gives me the very general question I get, many times is, okay, when can I start using the collar? My basic answer is 6 months, but that's very dog dependent. It's also dependent upon what have you done prior to this.
And that's the key right there.
100%.
Because it's the wrong, and you've mentioned this already, the wrong thought is, well, let's slap that e-collar on the dog when they're doing something wrong and let's correct that. Well, that's not what you should be thinking about. You should be thinking about what does that dog know and how can the e-collar reinforce
100%.
What you've already taught them, right?
And so with our dogs, I introduced the e-collar at about 3 months. And when I say introduce is when we're going to go outside, whether it's for them to go do their business, whether we're going to just go for a walk, we're going to go have some fun, I put the e-collar on. And when I put the e-collar on, we then immediately go do something the dog thinks is cool. And so I liken it to, today I'm wearing a blue shirt. If every time you saw me wearing a blue shirt, I gave you $20, how long would it take that when you saw me in a blue shirt to run to me? Well, not long.
Yeah,
well, so the dog, their $20 is going outside. It's having fun. It's getting a retrieve. It's getting a wing. It's just going outside to, go smell the world. So by putting on the e-collar, you notice I didn't say turn on the e-collar, but just
you just have it on.
Exactly.
You don't have it turned on because you don't want to be in a situation where you're frustrated and start hitting buttons.
Exactly right. And the other thing this is doing for us, I'll hear people say, well, all I have to do is just show the dog the remote and they listen. I'm like, okay, that's not what we want. I want the dog to listen. And so my dog will have worn the e-collar for several months before I ever push a button, be it tone, vibe, be it the lowest level of shock. So when they start getting those cues from the collar, they don't necessarily know it's the collar because they've had that collar on so many times and it never did anything. They're not associating, I only have to listen when I wear the collar. And so I think that's an important distinction. But so now we've got the dog, they've been wearing the collar, they're a few months old. Now we've started to do some of that training, whether it's treat, getting them to sit, getting them to do down, getting them to heel. We start introducing a leash. And we start now, this is really kind of the first pressure as the dog's away from us. In our hands, as we're holding the dog to get him to quit, fighting us to get him to steady, get him to calm down, we've put pressure on them with our hands. But the leash is that first time they've ever gotten pressure when they're away from us. And so with that, I can reel the dog in like a fish, but that's not what I'm looking for. I really want the dog to just take the least amount of pressure, just kind of that little tug on the collar. And as they comply, the pressure goes away. They come to us, and pretty soon the dog learns that when we're going for a walk and they hit the end of a leash, there's some pressure. We changed directions. They didn't comply. There was some pressure. Now they start watching for us to change directions. They start looking. They realize that if I just kind of walk beside this guy, that leash never tugs. And so I'm now in control of the leash. The dog thinks that he's the one controlling the leash and whether or not it ever tugs on him because they're just going to walk close. So as we're doing that, we're teaching the dog how to comply, how to react to pressure. And when I'm saying pressure, it's just that simple, just a little tug. It's not a yank. It's not a get over here now, but it's just that little tug on the leash to get them come towards us. That's the first thing we want them to see.
And early on, as you're starting to do that and you connect a pressure to a treat, a reward, right, when they come to you,
yeah,
that's a positive reinforcement. Is there, for some dogs, they're not food motivated. How do you reward a dog for doing what you want on the leash if the treat isn't what provides the gratification to that dog? Is it a petting or praise, vocal?
Find out what that dog wants. Because, you know, within the different breeds, with labs, I'm lucky that we always have that kind of retrieve desire. We can throw a dummy and that can be the reward. With our pointing breeds, we don't have that innate as much. I'm not saying there aren't some pointers out there that have tremendous retrieve drive, but with the retriever, sometimes you have that kind of as a fallback. So figure out what this dog wants. Does it want a stroke? Does it want those, you know, the ear scratch, a little chin rub? Does it just want the vocal praise?
Yeah.
Some dogs, they just want I want the pressure to go away. So that's the reward, is that they've taught themselves that as we're giving that little tug of the leash, okay, I just want that to stop. They just want that to go away. They want your voice. They want your affirmation.
So for me, I have had nowhere near the experience with dogs as you have, but for me, this is key. The moment you bring home a puppy, figuring out what gets that puppy's tail vibrating, what brings joy to that puppy, whether it's a reward of a treat or praise or vocalization, knowing that instantly, or as soon as you start figuring that out, that is a key component to recall, to obedience, is understanding what's going to pull that dog to comply with whatever command you're asking of it.
Very much so. What makes this dog's day? And it's going to be different from dog to dog. So you're spot on. Figuring that out quickly is important. And the sooner you can, the better you go, okay, let's do more of that. This is what's going to get my desired outcome.
Right.
And so now we've started using the leash. And as we're getting compliance with the leash, we're getting compliance with putting our hands on the dog. Now we're going to start giving those commands a name. So I haven't been saying heel. I haven't been saying those things until kind of get the dog understanding this is what I wanted. But now we're going to give it a name of, now it's heel, slight tug of the leash. So now they're putting together, there's a command. Mm. The command brings pressure. Compliance makes the pressure go away. That's where I'm going to steal from Chris Aiken. It's the old crawl, walk, run. So we're crawling, just using the leash. Now we're starting to walk. We're giving it a name and we're using the leash and doing the pressure. Now we can start instituting, once we have really good compliance with that, and the dog knows it really, really well, now we can use the e-collar. At the same time, I'm going to give the leash pressure. I'm going to give the dog a little bump with the e-collar. So the dog knows what the leash pressure means, and they know how to turn it off and how to comply. By doing those simultaneously, I'm showing you, okay, the e-collar pressure that you've never felt before and the leash pressure, they mean the same thing. And so that's why I'm doing them simultaneously.
And so that is a critical word, simultaneously.
Yes.
Because if you're tugging, and then there's 3 seconds before you hit the button, you're not connecting it close enough for that dog, correct?
Correct. You're spot on. We have to have it be, I forget the number of milliseconds that the behaviorists tell us we have, but we really need that to be as simultaneously as possible is the best. Mm-hmm. So the dog goes, okay, I know what that little tug on the collar means. This new pressure must mean that same thing because it's occurring at the same time. We're setting ourselves up for in the future when we don't have the leash and the dog just gets the e-collar pressure. I know what this means. Mm-hmm. And not only didn't know what it means, I know how I'm supposed to react. And that's the key is if I put a collar on you, Bob, and I suddenly started speaking a foreign language, our communication that's going really well right now breaks down.
Right.
And I can put all the pressure in the world on you, but you're looking at me like, well, like before when my microphone wasn't on. And you were looking at me like, dude, we're not communicating.
It actually makes things worse.
100%. Right? So I can...
you're hitting the button and I don't understand. And it's making that dog, the anxiety level go through 100%. The roof.
Yeah. And that's just it, is that the dog's now going like, dude, we were so good. I don't know what's going on. This is bad. I just want it to stop. And so that's where you get a lot of the bolting. The dog's just like, I want away from this, which when we're trying to call the dog to us, recall, bolting is the last thing we want. So having that dog understand, which is why opening day of pheasant season, I've worked some retail stores and the guys come in and go, and you got one charged. And I'm like, has your dog ever had an e-collar? You're like, no. I'm like, okay, then please don't use that on your dog today. Like, go have fun. Go enjoy your pheasant hunt. And then let's talk some off-season training. Let's talk some not in the field training, because that understanding is what's so critical, which is why we talked, you know, as we did, we start early, giving it, you know, the tugs, then we give the tug a name. We do the tug and the e-collar together so that now we can actually move into that off leash and just using the e-collar, but it's not a short process. It's not a 4-year college degree, but it's not a 30-minute and now we're done, which is the other key thing, especially with the younger dogs. Like 4 or 5 2-minute sessions is so much better than a 30-minute session. Like where you're just trying to keep their attention and the dog is going like, you've lost me. I'm out. I'm not paying attention anymore. This has become boring. This has become that. That's where I love having the dog in the house. That I work out of my home, and so I'll leave the office, go grab, you know, a glass of water in the kitchen. Take the dog. Let's go do heel drills. Let's make the dog heel to the kitchen. Along the way, let's do 4 or 5 sits. Well, I just got a 90-second training session that was really, really valuable for that dog. But back in the day when the dog was at the back of the property in the kennel, I had to put on the shoes to go outside, had to go get the leash, had to go get the dog. We're so much better off today when the dog is just, it's right here with us. LS is asleep under the desk right now at the moment while we're talking. That's his, where he spends his day. But him being there and having those dogs in the house is so important, and having everybody on the same page. Like mom needs to be on the same page as dad. The kids need to be on the same page, going that this really is, we're all working towards the same goal of having this dog being a good citizen. There are times when the rules are more lax, but especially early on, we're setting this foundation, getting everybody on the same page and showing everyone that this is, you know, it doesn't take a very big dog to be more than you and I want to handle. So as we get the kids trying to keep the dog, you know, in check, having these techniques with the dog being compliant is huge.
So when you talk about the same page, I think about, you know, what that means. And it's coming to terms, the entire family, on a word for recall. If you want the dog to come back to you, you know, is the family going to use here? Is it going to use come? You know, because if mom is using one word and dad's using the other word, you're going to confuse the heck out of that pup. So to have that conversation like, okay, kids, when we want LS to come back to us, we're going to all say here.
Absolutely.
And we're going to say here, and we want LS to be on our left-hand side. And when LS comes, we all give a treat. So that consistency where, like you say, everybody's on the same page, literally talk about what that same page is, from the word to what the expectation is, because then you're taking out the variables that confuse a dog.
You're so correct. And in here needs to be defined. Like you said, back to my left side in city. Here's not mm-hmm. 3 feet from me.
Right. And jumping because, on me for the treat.
Correct. And at 3 feet from me versus sitting at heel becomes huge when he has that wounded rooster. Because mm-hmm. now at 3 feet away, he's like, well, this is here. You spit the bird, and now we got a chase versus come to me, come finish that here all the way to heel. Having everybody doing it consistently, it's giant. And I think so, that's where.
So the consistency, the other piece of that is if you're putting the e-collar on, everybody knows what LS's level is.
For sure.
But part of that is figuring out what LS's level, LS being the dog's name, just for clarity. How do you figure out what level your pup responds to? How do you go about that process?
Yeah, so back to we have the leash on the dog, and we're going to do so we're going to use that pressure. We can tell a little bit by the amount of leash pressure it takes, but regardless of that, we always want to start the lowest settings of the e-collar. I don't want somebody to think, well, I've got this hard-headed, I've got this 70-pounder, I need to jump up high levels. I just want, like, barely an acknowledgement out of the dog. Charlie Journey, Beaver Dam Kennels, one of our longtime pro staffers, Charlie would look for the swallow response. When he would put the pressure or bump that dog with the e-collar, he'd look for that swallow. And it was, okay, the dog acknowledges they felt something, but it wasn't overwhelming. It wasn't too tremendous that the dog was like, okay, what was that? Look for an ear tick, or just kind of look for that head bob of like, okay, I felt that, but never a vocalization, never a wince, never a scared reaction, like, okay, what was that? We just want it to be like, if I walked up and just tapped you on the shoulder, that's kind of, you would just turn, slowly be like an acknowledgement, not if I come up and smack you in the arm and you like, well, okay, what was that? Yeah. I'm looking for just that slight acknowledgement, like, okay, I felt that. From there, we're going to build up to that level may not be enough to get the compliance. It may be lower than the pressure we were using tugging on the leash. We may need to go to a level two now. I will also say that around the house, LS is typically working on a one or a two. We go to the field, he's instantly working off the three or a four. The distraction's higher. The motivation that he knows that pheasant is way more motivation than whatever I can provide in the house. The distraction levels are higher. So having that situational awareness of it in this moment, it's going to require a little more. That's important to know as well.
Right. When do vibrate and when do tone, meaning the beep, when does that come into play?
So I have always been taught, and I've taught my dogs, the tone is a recall. It comes in really handy. So let's say we're late season pheasant hunting and, we're barely clicking the truck door shut. We're being as quiet as we can because those birds have been hunted and they're spooky. I don't want to be blowing a whistle, yelling his name, yelling here. If he starts getting out of gun range, I want that ability for the recall and to silently be able to recall him in. So that's how I use tone. It's also, even if it's not early season, we're not as quite as worried about the birds being spooky. Nobody wants to hear the dog's name yelled. I was 12 years old, Bob, and I hunted with a dog named Murray. I don't remember the owner's name, but I heard yelled 500 times in a two-day hunt. Nobody wants to hear that. So having that tone recall, that's how I like to use it. With LS, I use the vibe, the vibration as a remote sit. So he takes hand signals. We do a lot of waterfowling as well as upland hunting. And so I like to be able to give him a remote sit, but that vibration has also come in really handy. So Noel, our mini Aussie, who's 14, is now deaf. And so when she's outside and I need her attention, having that vibration there for a deaf dog is tremendously important. It's a cue I can give her that she can still acknowledge. And then once I get her eye contact, we slap our legs. She knows we want her to come to us. So it's really anything that the owner wants to turn those two cues into, it can become a command, no different than the here, the sit, the place, any of these commands. It just becomes another non-shot cue, but that's how I use them.
Yeah, it's a great reminder that it doesn't have to be a word to deliver a command to a dog. A vibrate can, like you've taught your dog, vibrate means sit. Sit in the field instantly, right? So it's a good reminder that it doesn't have to come with yelling something at the dog. A little bit of vibration around their neck can deliver a message for them.
I know some guys with pointing dogs, upland dogs, that use it to cast. So if I want to turn the dog, hit that vibe, and we can then give the dog a hand signal, or they just know, like, okay, it's time for me to turn. These dogs, they're so smart. It's just, it's amazing to me. It's so rewarding to have that hunting partner with such ability and really just trying to keep them from out of harm, but, use your natural instincts within control. That's what I love about these animals. It's these collars are not about dominance. It's not about like breaking their will. It really is, hey, can I keep you compliant? And for compliance sakes, I want you safe. If you're chasing that hen towards the road and there's a truck coming, I want to be able to shut you down and come back to me. There's an instance where I want you to ignore your instincts. But that's the other thing I think is important is that these collars aren't to break their will or to dominate the dog. It really is just a communication tool, something we have at distance. I can give that dog a little tap on the shoulder, reminder of, hey, this is what I need you to be doing. And if we set up that foundation properly as a pup, as we're introducing it, it's just laying the groundwork for future success when we have that dog out in the field and let's bring home those roosters. Let's go find that covey of quail or that, short-tailed grouse.
Yeah, that's the, you mentioned the dog that's chasing the hen or even a wounded bird towards a road. Or I think about a dog breaking for a covey of chuckers going over a cliff.
Yes.
An e-collar, you can't think of an e-collar as a tool to make up for your training inadequacies. An e-collar is going to save the day for situations where, the dog's motivation to chase that cripple across a highway or to chase those chuckers over the cliff, the e-collar can save that, give you a tool to stop that dog from doing something that they don't understand.
Completely.
And that's something that, it takes some time. Like you said, on opening day of South Dakota is not the first time you should have your e-collar on your dog.
No.
You should have it, as a pup, like you said, 3 months old, 4 months old, not on, not turned on, but on that dog to a step-by-step process for them to get used to it and for you to have some control over that dog when they're in the field running and working hard for you.
100%.
I'm going to ask you for final thoughts and anything we missed. Before I do that, I want to thank once again Sport Dog Brand for sponsoring this episode of On the Wing podcast. Founded in 2003, Sport Dog has been partnered up with Pheasants Forever ever since. Sport Dog has been a part of the upland traditions for more than 20 years, from preseason to opening day. Sport Dog is committed to the hunters, the dogs, and the habitat that make it all possible. We sincerely appreciate Sport Dog being a national sponsor of Pheasants Forever and of Quail Forever. And remind our listeners that every purchase of Sport Dog helps support conservation efforts nationwide. You can learn more at sportdog.com and check out all their products. Clay, did we miss anything?
I don't think so. Just to reiterate that, you cannot train too patiently. you can't, you know, bring that dog along with too much grace. You know, this is not a quick fix. This is a, you know, let's go slowly, but the reward is so worth it. Just put the time in and bring him along, and you're going to have, hopefully, you know, a decade plus of that dog to love and those memories, all the things to come. You know, you're going to have a hunting buddy. Even when your buddies are at work or something, having that dog along, you're never alone.
So as a short hair guy, as a pointing dog guy, I've always used the Sport Dog 1875. I think that's the right number.
Uh-huh.
It's got the remote beeper. Is that the right e-collar for a pointing dog person? And what do you recommend for, say, a Labrador or Golden Retriever folk?
So I love the beeper collar. We could actually have this exact same conversation about how to introduce the beeper. The last thing you want to do is throw the beeper on the dog. They go on point, and this thing makes this loud squawk.
Oh, yeah, that'll scare the heck out of them. Yeah.
And they've never heard it before, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, you've got a blinker. So we'd probably have a whole other podcast conversation about...
Good point.
Just introducing that beeper properly. But the beeper function, it's not... totally without use on a retriever. So I hunt a lot of cattail sloughs. And so it may be that we've gone into this cattail slough that's a half acre, and LS has gone to the right. I'm looking left for the flush. Having a remote beeper is handy to be able to just hit that locate and be like, okay, he's that direction as opposed to where I thought he was.
Right.
But, you know, generally, so the 425X is our best seller, 500 yards of range. You have shock, tone, vibe, all of the, you know, the key elements. Our 825X, sorry, the 825, you know, for just a few dollars more, you've upgraded to a half a mile of range. So you know you're never going to lose the ability, you know, to communicate with the dog. Those are great systems. We make them in camo. We make them in blaze orange, you know, for all the things that we as an upland hunter or waterfowler prefer. Tons of great options. All of them are multi-dog capable. They have the non-shock cues, the shock tone and vibe, all of those things. So yeah, check it out. Like you said, at sportdog.com, and you can go to the Pheasants Forever website. You can actually purchase through Pheasants Forever, buy there and double support the organization.
There you go. Yeah, you can find it under the shop button on our websites, and it'll take you right to Shields. Clay, thank you very much for doing this. Appreciate it.
Bob, thanks for the chance to chat, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yeah. Folks, thanks for listening. Definitely drop comments in you know, the podcast mentions on social media. Let me know how this episode hit for you. Did it help? Are there other things you want to know that you're interested in as it relates to e-collars? Thank you for listening to this episode of On the Wing podcast. I am Bob St. Pierre, reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks for listening, folks.